Join us on a journey through the strange and the unexplained on Python Radio with Annette Munich.
Tonight doesn't have a voice, so I'm Lisa Livingston Martin, standing in as host, and with me tonight as co-host is Edwin Becker. He's an author of A True Haunting, which is about real life experiences he went through, as well as several books and novels on the paranormal. Hi, Ed.
How are you doing, Lisa? It's a great pleasure.
You know, pretty good.
Huh? You know, for two authors interviewing a third author, it's got to be a first. You know, it's like the all-author hour.
That's true. That's true. You don't see it too often, so maybe we'll have some interesting fun and come up with something new. Who knows?
I'm not sure. You know, everybody kind of knows my take on ghosts. I had my fill 40-some years ago, and I thought I came to Missouri, you know, be kind of ghost-free. But here I see your book, Civil War Ghosts of Southwest Missouri. Uh-huh. Haunted Joplin is going to make me drive around Joplin. And now you're coming off with Wicked Route 66. I want to move to another state now. I want to get away from ghosts.
I hate to tell you, I think you'd have to go an awful long way to get away from them.
Either that or my personal protectors. I've got an empath, Geraldine, and I've got Jill Burrell, who nobody messes with. They got to come up here and protect me.
There you go. Well, Ed, our guest tonight, our third author tonight, is Kenneth Giel. He is the author of The Catholic Demonologist Handbook, a comprehensive guidebook to understanding, diagnosing, and solving ghost and demonic hauntings. Welcome to Python Radio, Kenneth.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Good deal. And I just wanted to mention that Ed and Kenneth and I will all be at the Ozarks Paracon on April 6th in Springfield. Ed and I are speakers. Kenneth is not a speaker, but he's going to be present as we talk tonight. So if you're going to be at the Shrine Mosque in Springfield for the Paracon, look us up. Mm-hmm. And I want to welcome all our listeners out there tonight. Thanks for listening in, and thanks for putting up with Ed and I fumbling through this in Annette's absence.
Stumble.
Hopefully not flat on the face. So, Kenneth, I kind of wanted to start off with, tell us what got you studying demonology, and what happened for you to write the book?
Okay, what's the first question? I'm sorry.
What started you studying demonology, and what research did you go through to write the book?
Okay. Wow, good questions. I like the way it starts out that way. What got me started, I'm born and raised Catholic. That doesn't really mean anything, especially nowadays, because there's a lot of cafeteria Catholics and stuff. And the Catholic Church, I think, is first off behind in what we call, you know, deliverance, which is dealing with, you know, the negative spirits and that sort of thing. And especially since last 50 years, I'd say. Yeah.
How do you reconcile the fact that they're starting a exorcist college? It seems like they're jumping right into it now.
I hope that's, you know, what's going to happen when the new pope is in there? Is he going to start saying demons, lay down your arms, you know, they want to be friends. Pope Francis, you know. No, it's hard to say when you get a new pope in there. Why did they change the exorcism right to begin with when Gabriel Amorth, the Vatican chief exorcist, now retired, of course, was actually opposed to it? And the exorcist had said that we're in there, but, you know, it's less effective. It doesn't even make any sense. So we're hoping that they don't make negative changes or they don't water down the training and the teachings for one reason or another. Misinformed, ill-informed, and there's a lot of ill-informed people out there. But we can go on. I guess I'm getting off topic already.
We are off topic. What Lisa and I want to know is we kind of understand, listeners out there, you may think that the paranormal is like real popular because you see all these TV programs. The real thing is, in books, paranormal is a very narrow genre. And there's no millionaires in the writing paranormal. People do it. I mean, I did it for therapy. Lisa does it, I think, to document history and to record stories. And she'll never get paid back for her time and research. I saw your work as substantial. So what drove you to write this book?
My personal experiences. And then, you know, as I became an older man, I just saw this kind of confused mix of belief systems and this science versus spirituality. You know, we got people in the nut house who are possessed.
Correct.
You know, how many and who, it's hard to say. And I think it's too much leaning to a science-only notion. And we don't want to lean to the religious-only notion and then, you know, make asses out of ourselves going to people's houses with crucifixes and banishing the demon of smoking, you know. So it's kind of a fine line on that kind of thing. And that motivates me in a way because I think it needs to get out that, you know, okay, this isn't right. Someone's mixing it up and then confusing the real problems. They're lightening it up. They're confusing the issues or mixing fact with fiction, you know, and TV isn't helping either. And I'm not talking about the shows where they have kind of eyewitness accounts. I'm talking about the Hollywood version of movies, Buffy the Vampire Slayer even going.
Well, Lisa, you know, tell me to shut up if I get in the way, but don't you think our society kind of lends itself? I mean, demons certainly have an easier time today than they had 2000 years ago. Today we got lottery tickets in every gas station. You got casinos. You got porn on the internet. There's temptation everywhere, and that little voice in your head says, "Hey, one more drink, and you're going to feel a little better."
Plus,
are we breeding demons?
Are you guys here?
Yeah.
Are we breeding demons?
Okay, I lost the right before you said I'm bleeding demons. The signal kind of faded a little bit.
No, I'm asking if our society cultivates demons.
Oh, yeah. I think it does. You know, and look at the stage thing. You know, wasn't Alice Cooper kind of cool to watch? Alice Cooper, Kiss, Gene Simmons spitting out blood, you know, but, you know, enough's enough. I mean, Saw.
Well,
Saw
I,
1,
I
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, Kenneth, 7, 8. You know, it's all satanic.
Right.
It's getting overboard.
Well, Kenneth, I think what Ed was actually getting to is that the complexity of our society and all of the material temptations that come along with it lends itself to the supernatural entities themselves, not just a portrayal of demons, but that actually makes people more vulnerable.
No, you're correct. What I'd like to say in a different way is that people think demons are going to jump out at you and spit green pea soup. Evil is attractive. I mean, if evil were not attractive, we certainly would run the hell away from it. Evil is the extra drink you can take, the money you can gamble, the extra dirty pictures you can watch while you're on the internet. It's there tempting you, and you know that voice in your head is going to say, "Oh, it's harmless." That's kind of what.
Yeah,
I'm
I got a couple. I know what you. I'm talking about that because you know people are saying, "What's the Antichrist going to be like?" And he's going to be charismatic. He's not going to be someone who has the aura or the essence of darkness like you encounter in hauntings and possessed people. You know, he'll have that charming side. You know, and why does everybody think that it's always going to emulate evil? And that's what discernment is. It's a wisdom to be able to tell the difference. And of course, there's some, you know, sayings in the Bible and so forth that says we'll know them by their fruits. Well, if you look hard enough, you can tell a demon from a knot. But some, you know, a great number of people will be fooled by something so meticulously clever and diabolical. And then it puts all your senses to the test. And it gives you all this, like, warm, fuzzy kind of feelings and everything like that.
You kind of described
really a masquerade.
You're describing our politicians.
Interesting. Yeah, I know. It does.
Mm-hmm. Kenneth, would you also say that we are, because of the complexity of our society and perhaps our sense of sophistication, that we are less prepared to recognize evil and the demonic than, say, 2,000 years ago?
Oh, yeah, a lot more. Well, of course, you know, some people are acting like that they were just burning witches right and left and discipline and everything was harsher, spared a rod. They literally used a rod, even though rod was more meant to be like a staff, you know, a ruling thing, not someone to beat your child with. People seem to, you know, like take things and get it carried away. The Crusades, the Spanish Inquisition, you know, I'm just talking about some of the things of one of the denominations. And then now it's like we take things too lightly. And I was just telling my wife, I said, okay, The Vampire Diaries is coming on after one of our favorite shows, one of the few we watch on broadcast TV, Arrow. And I was thinking, it used to be the leather jacket and motorcycle wearing guys were the forbidden fruit. Now it's the undead. You know, you put some lipstick on a guy and give him vampire teeth and all the girls will know.
Kenneth, I got a different take on that because I think our reality has become so horrific that the things that we wanted to scare us now have to be watered down. I mean, when a guy in Miami attacks another guy and eats his face.
Oh, yeah.
And a man in Boston attacks his wife and eats her arm. I'd much rather watch the wimpy vampires than the news.
Yeah. That's where it's gotten, though. I mean, that's the light stuff. And the same thing is true with the porn industry and everything else. You know, that when you get exposed to the hardcore or gore, that when you get exposed to the gore, it's like, big deal. And it's the same way with the haunting stuff. I remember when I first started reading True Cases of Demonic Hauntings in the 70s and whatever. When you read the old ghost stories that haunt a bell tower or a lighthouse, you were like, this is boring. I'm going to go to sleep now. You know, they weren't scary anymore. The Canterville ghosts, they were all like the Canterville ghosts suddenly when you read...
Well, now you're taking
say,
words
like that one case of diamond houses, you know.
Now you're taking words from me because that's how I felt in 1970. The only ghost I was familiar with was the Canterville ghost.
I know.
You remember? Or
and,
Topper?
You know, now people like... It's funny because, you know what's interesting about your stories? We can tell when they're true. It's funny. They go all this great length, and they always have to put murder and mayhem in it. And it's just not scary. You know, me and my wife are big fans of, you know, good haunted tales. You know, we don't like the gore and the slasher ones. And then they always resort to, you know, this blood getting splattered on the wall. That's not so scary. You know, someone getting dragged off into, you know, crawl space. That's not so scary. You know, but some of the old ones...
As Lisa knows.
If you're the one being dragged off, it might be a little scary.
That's a different kind of scary, I guess, you know. Here are the unknown.
I think
you can perpetrate with the Stephen King's 10 Bears that he wrote in an old Writer's Digest article about the basic things, fear of squishy things, fear for others, fear of the darkness, fear of, you know, ugly, hideous. You know, I forgot all 10 of them. I can probably name them all off.
Well, after,
they are better at making sound.
After 47 years of marriage, I have fear of my wife. What do you think of that one?
Oh, now.
I had to say this. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. I was watching this tale, and I'm like, oh, great, they survived together, and she's talking on there, and I was hoping that you guys would still be together, but 47 years, you don't know what will happen after that. At least the haunted house didn't break you apart, you know.
No, but that, let me tell you, that was a low point of our life, and in fact, that's what I would hope you're aiming your book at, is to help people make it through that. It's a very emotional thing. If you ask my wife, she's probably in the chat room, that was the weakest point of our marriage. Those entities almost busted us in half.
Yeah, they did in a lot of cases, you know, that most families don't survive. And, you know, one way or another, they get pitted against each other. I think in Bill Bean's case, the guy who wrote Dark Force, his father just got up one day to go for cigarettes and never came back, right in the middle of their peril haunting. And sadly, that's how it is sometimes. And coming out of it unscathed as a family, you know, is a trick in itself, because that's the whole, one of the big goals of the demonic is to break the family. It usually makes the father kind of turn against the mother, you know, parents against the kids. You remember the Haunting in Connecticut, you know, the movie adaptation of Carmen Reed's story,
right.
Formerly Carmen Snedeker. And she, her husband, you know, and her, I don't know when they got a divorce afterwards, but I don't think they got a divorce during or shortly after, but that really got heated. You know, when he's like, his electric bill is really high, you always hear about, oh, it's so cold in here and you got to turn the heat up and you got to get the, you know, the furnace fired up a little stronger, and then your heat bill goes skyrocket. And then they're freezing cold down here, those boys in that basement. It's already cold down here anyway. But on top of that, they're just worried about little 40-watt or 25-watt bulbs because they're scared of the dark, you know, after being in there. I say, hey, don't traumatize your kids. Spend $2 a month extra by having a, 40-watt or 25-watt bulb. And then he's crabbing, and he's, like, creating a divide against his children, and he's going to alienate himself with his children. They're going to be resentful. They're going to be frightened. You know, they can be traumatized by the darkness. And, you know, I don't care if he believes that, you know, there's ghosts or not. We don't need to let them be afraid when they're, even when there's nothing to be afraid of, or we think there is.
Now, Kenneth, I will say, if, you know, there's a difference in the portrayal of that story between the theatrical release and the documentary. And in a recent conversation I had with John Zaffis, who was one of the investigators there, he said, you know, the documentary is much more accurate to what actually happened than the film.
Oh, yeah, I was referring to the documentary. I guess I've kind of blown off the film, too.
No, that's true. If you watch Paranormal Witness, the season finale called The Tenants, they gleamed what they could out of my book, and it's over-dramatized, it's truncated, it's out of context, but it's good TV, and that's what movie people do.
Yeah, that's true, and that's what you said, that you didn't want them to do to your book, and it has been going on, and I think, you know, if you go back, you'll find that they took a license, and that's why they say based on a true story, because it is based on a true story. The foundation began on a true story, but what is it now? You know, but your book, it's good to hear that you didn't want them to tamper with the truth in there, because it's an education tool, too. When you put an event in there that didn't happen, you're giving people an incorrect observation and learning experience, a case study that can otherwise form opinions, you know, that can move to facts, you know, and help others, such as you. You know, right now, let's see, that was 71. You know,
yes.
Have you been compelled to, you know, try to help others, and, you know, in the last, how long has it been? 40 years now?
42 years. I haven't been compelled.
You don't want anybody to go through it as you did.
Yeah, no, I haven't been, I wasn't compelled to reach out. I'm brave, I'm not courageous. Brave is somebody who faces what they're confronted with. I think courageous is someone a little bit more, maybe like Lisa, who goes out and seeks it. So I sit back and I get emails, and yes, I've helped a lot of people. But I don't go out looking at these. I've been invited to see things. I don't want to. You know, with Lisa's book, Haunted Joplin, I'm not going to drive through Joplin anymore.
Yeah.
There's not a haunted toll road there.
I don't think I've ever actually been to Joplin. I think I went to a state, no, that was Sedalia. I went to a state fair once when I was, and it's funny because you said something about a musician. I did light shows, and I was at Sedalia and did one of those multi-concerts like Dan Seals and Leonard Skinner and Charlie Daniels. I think it was the Southern Summer Reunion Tour. And they showed up at the Sedalia State Fair in the late 80s or something like that, I think it was. But, you know, I always, like, had my own bands until I got, you know, married, moved to Springfield or whatever before the 90s. But, you know, having said that, off topic a little bit there, I just thought that was kind of an interesting kind of thing to stick to the topics. If we could sit around and have drinks and talk about stuff all day that's off topic, we got to watch that.
Does your educational?
Does your book?
I'm sorry, Lisa. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was going to ask you, since your book references hauntings as well as the demonic. Do you acknowledge that human spirits can be detrimental to the living as well?
You mean that notion ghosts can't hurt you?
Correct.
In effect, yeah, you know what? The funny thing is about that is, like, it doesn't take much. You know, if you remember some of the old PK research, I'm talking about not the poltergeist thing, but it goes back to the Hans Holzer times in the 60s, and they said that a laboratory test or whatever you call it, I don't know. It's been so long since I read that stuff. Some of that old library reference research and whatever, you know, books.
Sure.
It's not like I went to university and actually saw someone move a 5-pound object with their mind, but they were using a reference saying that they figured that, you know, we can't get a human to move something over 5 pounds. I don't even know if they could move something up to 5 pounds, but it doesn't take quite the energy that, you know, an adult would need to, you know, we're talking about not strangulation, but just think of the simple things you can do to trip someone going down the steps. It doesn't take much at all, you know, and there's a variety of ways that you can trigger some event or something. You know, you can distract them by, you know, being a demonic. You can be a black form that runs across the road that makes people swerve and hit a tree and die. There's a variety of ways they can kill you, ghost or demon or not, but that's not something. You know, if you do it accidentally, like, you freak out, like in those old Casper things where their eyeballs pop out of their head and they run through walls in the shape of their body. You know, I mean, you can freak yourself out and get scared over nothing, as far as that goes, but they can kill you in a variety of ways.
I've been a closet paraholic. I haven't went public. In fact, Paracon will be my first book signing where I'm going to show my face. We were treated so poorly in the 70s. But in all my research and experiences that I've had, I mean, it's a question that I wish someday somebody could answer, and that is why each entity has a different level of energy. You know, why are some of them smoke or mist? Why are some of them shadows? And Marcia and I, we witnessed a full-blown apparition. Mm-hmm. How does that happen, and why can some of them do certain things and others can't? I mean, that's a question I'm always bothered with.
Let me ask you first, and I'll answer that one and to what I understand. How much of an apparition was it? Did it look like it had color? Was it semi-transparent? Was it like someone was standing there, you know, with the color out of their face and black eye sockets?
No.
Something like that?
Well, that in fact, is what the public misconception is. Marcia and I saw an old woman at the bottom of the stairs. She was probably 20 feet away. She looked very kindly. It was an apparition I had seen prior, and she didn't, and we saw it together. So I kind of knew I wasn't going crazy. But I often tell people that had I taken a picture of her and I showed it to you, you would say, well, it's just a picture of an old woman.
Yeah.
And that's what it would have been. There was no pins in her head, and there was no, she wasn't spitting, no flames. It was just an apparition.
Yeah, there's not an absolute on some of those because I saw a flaming face And then I find that what we call purgatory spirits, those are good ghosts between, and don't let the word purgatory throw you, just to your listeners. It's got a bad hype, it's got a good hype, it's whatever it is, whatever you know about it, just forget about it. It's just a middle place between this world and heaven, and it is not a place, it's a phase of existence. And it's like at one time or another, you know, people believe, oh, the face is encompassed in flames, it's in hell. No, there's actually, the Pope John Paul, who got the Sister Faustina established as a saint. She's a Polish nun, a mystic, and she brought the Chapel of the Divine Mercy. I don't want to go into the Catholic stuff too much, but she had a nun who had passed away, and she appeared to her one night when she was praying as a fiery face, angry, and all this other stuff. And, kind of Christians and stuff would just say it's evil, and they would get a crucifix and ward it off. The problem is, if it's not an evil spirit, a crucifix or whatever holy positive symbol is not going to affect it away, because that works in evil spirits.
Gotcha.
If anything, they'd be drawn to it, because when they're in that state, they're working things out in the inner life. They probably don't have issues with positive spirits, such as Jesus will just say in more universal terms. And as she prayed for the spirit and, prayed for intercession, praying to positive spirits, to heaven, to intercede on behalf of the spirit, in the middle place, instead of getting, a blind psychic medium to show up and say, go to the light, she prayed for the spirit, prayed for intercession to have positive spirits intervene. So when she saw the spirit again, the flames were out and the face looked more pleasant. What it tells you is that the first condition of the spirit was kind of like where it was at. It might have been in a deeper kind of area. It was representing itself. Maybe it's some form of guilt. We don't know. Some of that thing, it's just telling us that it's not an evil spirit, as you might have guessed. Even the game Doom 3 had some, floating fiery faces or something chasing you around in the game, and they look like souls of the tortured and undead. That's in some old notion. That's not a hell spirit. So that kind of changes what we think. Now, getting back to the apparition thing, the shadow that we do notice is that when you see the darker ones, and it doesn't mean that, all non-shadows are going to be good spirits at all. It just means that we notice the darker the entity, the more likely it's going to be evil. We don't seem to get case history or any variety of reason saying that the shadow people are and unmanifested ghosts, such as I don't want to mention names, such as TV shows try to present. That's their take on it. But when you see an entity that's a shape of a human, or a hooded specter, and it's darker than the darkness of your room with no lights on, then you're probably dealing with a demonic spirit, especially if it doesn't have that shape of a human. And some people have gone so far as like, oh, let's start designating. We'll call this one Hat Man because he's got a hat. And I'm like, oh, come on. Just think of how many old houses there are out there and how many people used to wear hats going back to even the 60s. I think I'm on pictures of my dad wearing those kind of hats the Irishman wear and stuff. The Three Stooges, just about every episode of the Three Stooges were wearing hats. Laurel and Hardy, hats were very common with men. So, if you see a spirit and it's a fallen spirit, you see a perfect dark shadow figure and he's, people have seen the outlines of them all the way down to the boot cuffs, not just a hat. But it's not like Hat Man with this big old cowboy brim and a big coat.
Are you saying that you think all shadow people are evil?
Sometimes it's our perspective of the dark, versus, but it's very likely going to be just because it is as simple as positive versus negative. The essence of the spirit in the afterlife is going to be black, and it's not an unmanifested ghost. That actually is a representation of the blackness of its being, now that it's joined the legions of darkness, so to speak. But and they don't usually bring with them something, that's usually a terrifying experience. And, it brings with it kind of a blackness in the feeling, affecting your dreams, bringing in bad health or omens. you know, and it's the early precursor to all of the major demonic hauntings. The first thing they see is the corner of your eye. You see shadow beings kind of fleeing. Later on, they make themselves more known where you see them, you know, show up at your bedside. And, you know, it's pretty common. So it's better safe than sorry to assume that. And there might be some spirits, you know, and we're getting in kind of a gray area here, literally. But we're talking about the spirits that are between this world and heaven, and it can't be, you know, they would be good spirits at some level, even if they don't have a happy look on their face, like with the St. Faustina case. We just don't know what the blackness has a perspective. When you're in a dark room and you see a being, you know, that is darker than the dark room, it's most likely demonic just because of the essence of it and its color. It's just, some of those telltale signs are just as kind of simple, like the ear markings. You know, and they're easy to pick out in that way. But sometimes maybe the room isn't so dark, but it looks like a dark spirit, and it's actually not. We're just, it's our perspective of it. But you can't miss that when you're in a black room, and it's like, wow, I thought the room was pitch black, but yet I can see this entity in the silhouette and the outline of it, even in a pitch black room.
How many have you seen firsthand?
Too many to count. And yeah, you can ask my wife. She's got a bunch of tales. One each day. Yeah, and one of the ones that I think I started to see the shadows was when I was older, starting at about 14, 15. And I gave two accounts to Rosemary Ellen Guile, and she put them in, I think she was writing a book. Did she ever finish that one? She was writing something about shadows or something, I don't know. That was some time ago. That was like 2007. And one of the accounts was that the shadow was in the... I woke up, you know, and I looked around the room, and it was pitch black. And this is the account where I just saw the shadow outline of the head and the arms, and it was standing in my doorway for some reason. You know, they call them the watchers, and when these people who try to categorize them and all that kind of stuff, they're never standing or watching. They're always doing something. They're manipulating your dreams, which I can account for firsthand, saying they're trying to, you know, to mess with you one way or another. They're there, you know, scout and roam, whatever. And this one, of course, you know, I wasn't, you know, I'm just 15. I'm not familiar with all these facts and, you know, well, things that I've learned over the years and understand better. So when I saw that, I just kind of had my eyes fixed on it. And then I saw the movement coming towards me. And I'm like, oh, my God, there's a burglar in here. He's coming to kill me because I caught him. So I jumped out of my bed and I jumped through my screen window. I screamed. You know, you don't hear guys scream very often, but man, it's like I really scream. I'm surprised I didn't wake my mom and dad up. And I just went around to the front of the house and knocked on the door. It's like 3 a.m, you know, the typical, which is something I'd like to bring up later too, about the 3 a.m. thing, which is real.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you that if you thought it was a real person, run for the hills. A ghost, I'm not necessarily frightened of in a sense of fear. But somebody who's on crack coming through my door, I'm afraid of that.
Yeah.
Well,
isn't that funny?
We're getting real close to a break here.
Okay.
And but I think we want to explore this a little more when we come back.
Okay.
And I want to leave you with a thought. Is that a lot of human entities seem to appear differently. And I don't think it has a lot to do with the kind of, just as we have different personalities in life, that there remains a trace in death as well.
Oh, definitely.
And I don't think we can generalize that if they have a certain look, they're all good or all bad, etc.
Well, that's the shade, we'll just say, like the tint. It does seem to dictate it. And it's been really reliable for me. Now, the actual appearance is something in itself. Even if you just see a silhouette, if you can see what it is of a silhouette, you know, something detailed, hat man or whatever, that kind of tells you actually the details instead of just the shade of gray. But I think the shade of gray is definitely a telltale sign and a warning that you should pay attention when you see something dark and shadowy as opposed to, you know, the gray, the other type of hauntings and you know, I'm ready for a break myself.
I've got a big question, but I'll hold it till after the break.
All right.
Turn up the volume and rip that sucker's knob off so you don't have to hear them bitch. GameCon Radio.
Just a reminder, guys, all our talk show hosts here at GameCon Radio volunteer their time, but you can always show your appreciation. Click on the tip jar and give them a little love. I'm sure maybe your predictions will come out a little bit better. And that's how we roll here at GameCon Radio. We rock your game and your paranormal.
Folks, you know I love indie films, and the other day I ran across one called Beer and Seed. It has edge. It's about an older man who returns to college, and it doesn't go well. It even includes this comedy song called I Love the Fat Chicks. I got it off of Amazon.com. You can download it. I rented it. Or, you know what, you can go to www.beerandseedthemovie.com. Indie films are awesome. Beer and Seed has edge. Rent it. I'm not kidding you. It's the greatest thing.
Welcome back. You're listening to GCR Internet Radio, www.gcrinternetradio.com. The song in the break was Creed with Arms Open Wide. Kind of appropriate tonight for our discussion, I think. Our show is sponsored by Beer and Seed, which is an indie film that was nominated for Best Indie Film of 2012, and also sponsored by the forums at SG Cafe. Everyone's invited to share their ghostly stories on their supernatural board. I do want to mention the Ozarks Paracon that's coming up on Saturday, April 6th in Springfield. Ed and I will both be there. We're going to have some great speakers, including Keith Age, Stephen LaChance, author Janice Tremere, Rob Garcia, Dr. Michael Lynch, and we're going to have all kinds of things going on. You can visit the website at www.ozarksparacon.com for tickets, and also you have a chance of getting a free copy of the book, the 2012 Paranormal Cookbook, with your ticket. Also, it's going to be at the Shrine Mosque, and after the conference, we're going to have a live paranormal investigation, and it's the first investigation at the mosque. Should prove to be a very interesting time, so we encourage everyone to come out. We also want to thank our Paracon sponsor, the Sixth Sense World in Savannah, Georgia. Ed, I think, why don't you lead off with a couple of questions that you had during the break?
Yeah, I've got kind of a big one. Our country is arguably 80 to 87% Christian. Let's say 80% for the most conservative. I know for a fact from research that we've got more varieties of Christianity than Baskin's got ice cream. If you read your New Testament, which we all have, and all the New Testaments kind of resemble each other, I think it's inarguable that Jesus, for the most part, expelled devils and spirits everywhere he went. It's all over our New Testament, even though people don't like to dwell on it or ministers. Jesus himself, when he gave his apostles orders to go out into the world, I'm quoting now, "The kingdom of heaven is at hand. Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse the leper, cast out devils. Freely ye received, freely give." Matthew 10:8. So my question is, why does Catholics, has other forms of Christianity just sort of abandoned exorcism? Kenneth?
Did we lose Kenneth?
I'm sorry. It looks like we lost him. Stand by.
Okay.
We got a demon on the line.
Maybe it made their presence known.
It's that wicked Route 66. When the signal comes over there, that's what it does.
That must be it.
Either that, he really did like my questions.
Hello.
Yeah, just dropped out.
Did you catch any of what I asked?
No, I missed it all because she said we're going to do some announcements, and then like before she actually started them,
I'll give you a capsulized version. I won't do the narrative again, but we're basically a Christian nation, and.
Yeah.
Why do you think Catholics have the franchise on exorcism? We never see a movie, let's say, about evangelist exorcism or Baptist exorcisms. Have we just abandoned it, even though Jesus ordered his ministers to do that, his disciples, his apostles?
Oh, I think that's not too hard to answer. I think one of the things is symbolism. You know how media loves symbolism? You know, you've got more definitive costumes, you know, whether the Roman collar, and the churches are really elaborate. They don't look like meeting halls. They're not modern. You know, they're very majestic, you know, and you know, statues and all this kind of thing. You know, besides the history, I don't know how much people know the history, you know, the going back, but I think that plays a big part, is just the visuals itself. And then on the other side, you have guys, I can't remember. I probably wouldn't bring it up anyway, what his name was. Remember what I was saying about casting out the demon of smoking? You have these guys that wear these kind of plaid shirts and, you know, just regular pants like they would wear if they were an accountant. And then they have all these people standing in line and slap Bibles on foreheads, you know. And the person, you know, is supposedly delivered from some form of, you know, spirit. And they'll growl and other things. It's like, oh, yeah, exorcism, standing in line. You know, no, wait. Why don't we have a drive-through where a giant palm comes out and slaps you on the forehead and they stick money in the donation bucket like Burger King or something and drive through. And so you have people dressing and acting goofy on the other side. So that's kind of tarnished it. But, you know, some of them are doing legitimate work on a lower level. And, but I think part of it has to just do with Hollywood loves its costumes and it's more effective. And, you know, you, the chanting and all that stuff, it just, I don't know. The churches, the dress, the behavior, and I think the opposite is kind of is true in a way. I know the Catholics get, you know, the charismatic groups and the groups that work with priests and stuff on the outside, where they just do deliverances. If they don't do the actual exorcism, they don't have to get a bishop approval. And a priest can do some blessings and whatever over a person, even have them recite their vows or give them a baptism again, which, you know, the Catholic and Orthodox one has sort of like a built-in symbol exorcism, as they call it, the shorter one, having them renew their baptismal vows or their confirmation ones. And I think that's kind of the big thing.
I've got a quick one. I got a quick one. Your book is titled, the first part of the title is The Catholic Demonologist Handbook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who is your target audience? Doesn't that scare away the average person?
Well, you know, I had to put that on there because I found out I had so many things. And I know some people have problems with, you know, prayers that pray for intercession of Mary. And there's even a lot of ignorance and prejudice against how Catholics and Orthodox honor and venerate the saints. And, you know, I explained I broke down the Hail Mary into the first two-thirds of the Hail Mary is actually quotes in the Bible. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. That's actually Angel Gabriel's, the quote from the Bible. And the second part is, blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. That's what her cousin Elizabeth said to her when St. John leaped for joy, you know, when she went to visit her to help her, you know, with her baby, when Mary herself was actually expecting Jesus. And the last part is, you know, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen. That's nice. You're asking Mary to pray for us to God. She's right there in heaven. It's like, hey, would you go and nudge him? You're right there. So it's an intercession prayer. And I find out I had so much of that in there because it has all of the things the church offers, you know, and exorcisms and prayers and sacramentals and crucifixes used, not crosses, holy water, blessed salt, blessed oil, special prayers with intercession, not just, you know, in specific prayers and advice that's more leaning Catholic and Orthodox. But, you know, anybody can use it, except they can't participate in all the sacraments, of course, unless you, you know.
Well, that was my question. Titled The Catholic Demonologist Handbook, don't you think that scares the average person away?
Well, you know, it's good you asked that, too, because me and my wife are revising it for something generic. To, you know, to Christian, non-denominational, and we're putting in the stuff that we might find will work straight across the board to any and all Christians that's not specific Catholic, because if they go in there and it's like, okay, what are they going to remove Mary and St. Michael's name from there because they have problems with intercession prayers? Well, I respect that. That's fine. And references going on about St. Benedict medals or anything like that. And I put, you know, some prayers in there that were different than ones I had in there, like pleading the blood of Jesus and so forth, that work well in deliverance ministries that are, you know, non-denominational and otherwise. And what we got is something that we're going to probably have an underground edition that we're going to have at the Paracon that'll just simply be called the Christian Demonologist Handbook instead of the Catholic. And it's interesting you said that, because that's what I was thinking about, is I wanted to, you know, meet them halfway further than what I already tried to do, because I have some universal explanations in the Catholic one and try to explain people the Catholic perspective and everything like that, which is great. But this one we hope will, you know, finish it.
I just wonder
something just by title. You know, yeah, there's a lot in a title. I see that on Amazon. If you're not Catholic, they might not buy my book. But when they see this one, and we cater to all Christians, you know, Catholics even, of course. You know,
now, Ken, is this other book, is this out for the public to buy yet, or is this?
No, yeah, we're just kind of going over it, and so I'll be selling an underground edition at the Paracon, which is, it's not published yet. And I always wanted to get them out right away. In my book, The Catholic Demonologist, before it was published, I actually sold underground editions that I printed up, and I don't know, I sold like 150 copies, so people want them and they get them out there. And I think it's better to do that than wait till later. And you know what? It's a textbook. It's not, I'm not telling a story. So I'm not worried about, you know, like if I accidentally have a typo that Word didn't see, like the word the is supposed to be the word they. And then, you know, some people get really meticulous, like, oh, yeah, you should have revised and have some perfection. I'm not going to worry about all that stuff. You know, I mean, people glossed over that who don't know the topics, and they accidentally put the wrong words in there, and it totally changes the meaning of it. You know, when they're trying to spell check and, you know, put the grammar in there they think is proper, it, you know, so I don't know if my books are ever going to be, you know, my English teacher or, you know, whatever in college or something would approve of and say is ready for 100% print. So if it faces that kind of scrutiny, and they want me to take something out to be politically correct, I, you know, like Edwin, I'm kind of like trying to be careful on that.
Well, yeah, my book Banished is about a demon, and the word demon scares the hell out of a lot of Christians. They don't want to deal with it. They don't want to know the name. In fact, it's very frightening. On Amazon.com, the exact demon that I took from ancient demonology that's in Banished, if you use his name, and I won't mention it on the air, and if somebody wants the name, they can read the book, or you can get me at edwinbecker.com. But if you take that name and you go on Amazon, they're actually selling the demonic symbol with the name and masquerading it as a love token.
Oh, no.
Can you imagine?
Is it actually a demon of there's no demon of love, demon of lust.
No, this guy has nothing to do with love whatsoever. He's documented over 600 years old. He commands 26 legions, which is a legion, 5,200 demons, and I don't know if they march or what they do, but
That's part of the problem we're talking about in society. And you know,
can
in
you
the
imagine?
Old days, we heard John Todd on the radio and stuff talking in Southwest Baptist. Southwest Radio Baptist Church or something in the 70s, and he was talking about this thing that it looks like, they call it the leprechaun staff. It looks just like a little mini horn he used to wear on his hands, and that was supposed to be, you know, have some sort of occult ties and all that kind of stuff. They're wearing symbols and all that thing, and unless it's somebody guessing, you know, like, oh, that looks satanic, you know, and then they lose their credibility when they start doing, remember the backwards masking on records?
Sure.
And I got a section in my book called The Mirrored World Beyond. And I remember talking to, you know, people that, you know, claim they could speak backwards, you know, and they think that's a kind of a, they brag about it. You know, some, you know, we just say black witches or whatever, you call them sorcerers or, you know, something like that. And they think that, you know, the demons understand that better and it has some sort of power to be able to be bilingual in that way. And that might be some of the things that produced the, you know, maybe if anything was legitimate in the backwards masking, it wasn't purely accidental, that there does seem to be a perspective of judgment from demonic spirits. You know, they write backwards on the walls. In some of these hauntings, it shows up like death to God, and then you look at it and you're like, oh, wow, this is actually written different and written so badly, it looks like a child written it. When it's actually a distortion of perspective, some of these lower level demons actually will just say don't have the wisdom of some of the higher ones to write as beautiful as they can. And it's not a matter of being, you know, like rebellious and anarchist. It's just it's an error in perspective judgment, writing the name backwards. That's the way they see it. You know, sort of like there's some evidence on that. And that's interesting that I kind of go over, you know, briefly in the book. And one of the things I was mentioned too is I know all the scientific stuff, and there's a lot of new things now. And, you know, the Ouija board is, you know, it's a sad tale, the way it can just totally ruin some people's lives, such as your sister, Edwin. And we got new ones now that people are using in the same fashion, and it just makes it just as dangerous because it still opens you up. And that can be EMF meters can be used. You can make it rock once for a yes, twice for a no. You can use those K2 meters. And then Frank's box, and they actually modify some cheap little Radio Shack version to do that. And I remember telling somebody, I thought, okay, where are we getting? And this goes to what you were saying about them selling a demonic symbol on Amazon as a love, you know, charm. Is that people are getting to the point, you know, if they, if you had a haunted house, you remember that old movie with Karen Black where that that little native doll with sharp teeth comes to life and starts running around and stabbing her with, I don't know, it was called Chucky. Trilogy of Terror.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's like Chucky. It was the original one. It was a Trilogy of Terror, and it had Karen Black and all three of them playing different kind of things. I think it was a made-for-TV movie originally. Now, nowadays, if we had, you know, a doll like Chucky come to life, you know, someone would probably box it like that frog on Looney Tunes and then take it and put it on stage and then, you know, have it going up there going, hello, my baby, hello, my dollar, you know. Like, yeah. I mean, that's the way people have gotten it. It's like they're looking for entertainment and this kind of thing. How much, to what degree are they going to be absolutely frightened at the idea that there's a doll that has no robotics or puppeteering? And I'm not talking about these illusions that Chris Angel or, you know, some of these magicians and stuff like that, you know, perpetrate with whatever, you know, gadgets and devices and stuff like that. I'm just talking about what would happen if they actually found a possessed demonic doll that actually can walk around the house and stuff like that, you know, and someone going to try to make money out of it. And then we have Frank's box. People aren't alarmed over the, you know, a dancing doll. Now, how about the impossibility? My schooling is in electronics, and I know what Frank's box would entail, and you have to think about the odds. What kind of spirit can actually predict what a broadcaster is going to say so it can scan to the next frequency and take a sample of that, and then go to the next one and take a sample of that and do that and keep repeating it until you get something intelligible? You know, I say when it comes to extraordinary to that level, that's demonic because, you know, you don't get extraordinary powers to get inside electronics and manipulate it and be able to predict like that. And extraordinary usually equals demonic is the formula that you can chuck down on the blackboard. And it takes the fun out of it. People don't want to hear that.
Hey, Ken,
but it goes back to it again. It is a Ouija board still. Yeah.
Ken, I hate to say, yeah. I think we're just about ready to wind up. I think that's a real interesting note to end on. And again, anyone who's interested in Ken's book can find it at Amazon, and it's the Catholic Demonologist Handbook, a comprehensive guidebook to understanding, diagnosing, and solving ghost and demonic hauntings. And everyone, we encourage you to stay tuned for the next show that's The Highway of Light with DJ Deadeye next week on Python Radio. Hopefully Annette will be back with us, and our guest will be Stephen LaChance, author and a speaker at the upcoming Ozarks Paracon. Thank everyone for tuning in.
Thank you. Probably have to put more information up there because I actually renewed the domain. I had to put the content back up there. And I'll be at the I'll be signing tables with my wife, and she'll be selling jewelry and other things. So I'll be signing books for this.
We'll look forward to meeting you.
Yes, and we'll see you all there. Have a good evening.
Sounds good. Have a good evening too. I have a correction. Highway of Light is not going to be airing tonight. I'm sorry. I just got that update. But we encourage everyone to listen in next week for Python Radio. Thank you very much.